on anticipation. It was hard to say when exactly winter arrived. The decline was gradual, like that of a person into old age, inconspicuous from day to day, until the season became an established, relentless reality. First came a dip in evening temperatures, then days of continuous rain, confused gusts of Atlantic wind, the fall of leaves. By December, the new season was entrenched, and the city covered almost every day by an ominous, steely grey sky, like one in a painting by Mantegna or Veronese, the perfect backdrop to the crucifixion of Christ or to a day beneath the bedclothes. The neighbourhood park became a desolate spread of mud and water. Passing it one evening during a downpour, I recalled how, in the intense heat of the previous summer, I had stretched out on the ground and let my bare feet caress the grass, and how this direct contact with the earth had brought with it a sense of freedom and expansiveness, summer breaking down the usual boundaries between indoors and out, and allowing me to feel as much at home in the world as in my own bedroom. But now the park was foreign once more, the grass a forbidding arena in the incessant rain. Any sadness I might have felt, any suspicion that happiness or understanding was unattainable, seemed to find ready encouragement in the sodden buildings and low skies tinged orange by the city's streetlights. Such circumstances, together with a sequence of events that seemed to confirm Chauffeur's dictum that a man must swallow a toad every morning to be sure of not meeting with anything more revolting in the day ahead, conspire to render me intensely susceptible to the unsolicited arrival of a large, brightly illustrated brochure entitled Winter Sun. Its cover displayed palm trees on a sandy beach, fringed by a turquoise sea set against a backdrop of hills, where I imagined there to be waterfalls and relief from the heat in the shade of sweet-smelling fruit trees. Those responsible for the brochure had darkly intuited how easily their readers might be turned into prey by photographs whose power insulted their intelligence. Photographs of palm trees, clear skies, and white beaches. Readers who would have been capable of scepticism and prudence in other areas of their lives reverted in contact with these elements to a primordial innocence and optimism. The longing provoked by the brochure was an example, at once touching and pathetic, of how projects and even whole lives might be influenced by the simplest and most unexamined images of happiness, of how a lengthy and ruinously expensive journey might be set into motion by nothing more than the sight of a photograph of a palm tree gently inclining in a tropical breeze. I resolved to travel to Barbados. If our lives are dominated by a search for happiness, then perhaps few activities reveal as much about the dynamics of this quest, in all its ardour and paradoxes, than our travels. They express, however inarticulately, an understanding of what life might be about, outside the constraints of work and the struggle for survival. Yet rarely are these travels considered to present philosophical problems, that is, issues requiring thought beyond the practical. We're inundated with advice on where to travel to. We hear little of why and how we should go. Though the art of travel seems naturally to sustain a number of questions, neither so simple nor so trivial, and whose study might contribute to an understanding of what the Greek philosophers beautifully termed eudaimonia, or human flourishing.